Time is 7 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard on the web at www.kboo.fm. Stay tuned for Ear to the Streets coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the opening of Mommy, an exhibit at Yale Union Saturday, October 10th at 4 p.m. Mommy is a group exhibition featuring work by Lutz Bacher, Sonia Hamilton, Diane Simpson, and more, including a performance by Corinne Schneider. The show opens October 10th at 4 p.m. and will be up through December 20th. Again, that's Mommy at the Yale Union, 800 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and jobs crisis Saturday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Joe Uline is a labor leader who will discuss the urgency and the climate crisis and the response that must be made in carbon neutral work, education, and more. Again, that's an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and job crisis, Saturday, October 10th, 6:30 p.m. at the AFL-CIO Hall at 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Listen, my friends, as I tell you, the spark that will fly, the spark that will fly. Listen, my.
It's like, that, you know, the civil rights movement. We was asking, you know, now that those people that were asking, they're all dead and in jail. So now what do you think we're gonna do? Ask?
Ear to the streets, ear to the streets. Ear to the streets, ear to the street, ear to the streets, ear to the street, ear to the streets, ear to the street,
ear to the streets, 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 ear to the streets.
So much for tuning in to Ear to the Streets of Portland with your host Stephen G.
Yes, hello, wonderful, thank you.
And myself, Sequoia Ezekwe. And Ear to the Streets of Portland airs every first and third Thursday of the month. On the Ground Production seeks to produce news stories and conversations from organizers, community and business leaders, and artists from Black Portland and surrounding areas, and highlighting them here on Ear to the Streets of Portland on KABU. If you know of anyone in your networks who is Black African American and who works in and for the community or is an artist, please share the email address onthegroundkabu@gmail.com for best contact. Also, check out our past shows on for Ear to the Streets of Portland on kboo.fm website under programs and find other podcasts. Thank you so much again for tuning in to this evening's show. And as always, a big, huge thank you to new members for your support for KABU and Ear to the Streets of Portland. I also want to give a shout out to our last guest, the organizers from the last show that came down to KABU Studios to talk about the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March, Justice or Else, which is happening October 10th, 2015. That was a pretty good show, don't you think, Stephen?
Yes, indeed. I'm here with you.
And in the background, we got a little bit of Erykah Badu playing Four Leaf Clover. And of course, that's on the album Baduism, one of many of the best albums by Erykah.
Definitely. Takes me back to our little last week, little donations things here, man. We had that old school going in there. I got so many likes and hits on that one, man. Everybody in Portland, I think, was grooving to that one.
Nice.
You betcha.
We'll have to do that again.
Oh, the people are asking for it, definitely.
And so tonight's Ear to the Streets, we have the organizers for the International Center for Traditional Childbearing. They are here to talk about the upcoming International Doula Training in Health and Healing. Who do we have with us right now, Stephen?
Well, to my right here, we've got Kim Porter. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi.
All right. And hi to you, too. And then to my left, we have...
I'm Zalacia Jackson, ICTC's Oregon State Representative.
All right. Thank you. Wonderful having you guys here.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. We're excited about being here.
Yes.
Yeah, it's your first time here at KBOO. You know Jamila Berdon, who has a show every second and fourth Thursday of the month. Guess who's coming to radio? So you know about her show.
Yes.
But this is your actual first time here in the KBOO studios.
Yes.
And this is your first time too, Zalacia, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you, ladies, for coming down and talking about this very important upcoming...
Conference.
Yes.
And so what's the date of the conference first?
The conference is going to be Friday, October 9th. It starts at 7:50 a.m. to
Lord
be exact.
Have mercy.
And then it goes all the way through the weekend until October 10th, closing at 3 p.m.
Okay. So they've taken up the weekend.
I mean 11th. I'm sorry. The 9th through the 11th.
Okay. International Center for Traditional Childbearing is started back in mid-1990s, right?
Yeah, it started in 1991 by founder and president Ms. Shafia Monroe.
Who has been to KBOO many a time.
Yes, she has. She's a very inspirational, empowering, very driven woman.
Absolutely.
Who has vision. And she created... the International Center for Traditional Childbearing, or ICTC, as I'll abbreviate it, enhance the numbers and of culturally competent doulas and midwives to prevent infant mortality, to reduce the rate of infant mortality, focusing on prevention.
We'll talk about that here shortly, but. Let's talk about the conference, and then
yes.
We'll go into reason why we're why the conference is actually happening. So the conference is going to focus in on midwifery and doula, right?
Yes, midwifery and doulas, youth, Black youth, and healers as well.
What is something that the people can look forward to? Give us a couple of highlights or things for people who are participating to look forward to.
Yeah, so of course the number one thing is the solidarity of amazing, phenomenal women, experts and educators from all over the world coming together.
Uh-huh.
Here at the headquarters of ICTC in Portland, Oregon. One of the most exciting highlights, though, is that Erica Badu will be present. She's ICTC's international spokesperson.
That's why I played her.
And she's been...
All right.
Which would you say?
I said that's why I played her.
Oh, yes, of course. And she has been... ICTC spokesperson since 2010. So that's another highlight. And she'll be presenting Friday morning.
She'll be actually here in Portland.
In Portland, Oregon, presenting at 7:50, between times of 7:50 and 9:30 a.m.
Oh, man,
Friday
I don't know
morning.
If I can get up that early, but I might.
Yes,
for Erica Badu.
For Erica Badu, you should.
Yeah,
it's going
to
be amazing.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Not only is she an amazing artist, but mm-hmm. she has been on the path and journey to become a doula and midwife herself. Well, she is a doula.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if she's finished her midwifery certification uh-huh. yet, but she's definitely in the birth world community doing work and
uh-huh.
mm-hmm. and carrying on this legacy mm-hmm. of the Black midwives. And she has a lot of exposure to touch millions of people.
Millions.
So I'm glad that we have her
right.
In the forefront of things.
Before we, I'm glad we're talking about this. And as the one brother in the room, I just have to ask a very simple, basic question: the difference between a midwife and a doula, is that what it is?
Yes.
All right. Can you break that down for me, real
yes.
quick?
Well, an easy definition when I tell people, I always say, think of the midwife as the doctor and the doula as the nurse. The midwife provides all of the clinical care for women. They see the women throughout the prenatal care, okay, and of course have these education conversations about nutrition, about your pregnancy and the baby inside and different ailments or different different health issues that may come up that you need more information on. They consult with other practitioners and doctors, okay, and a doula is more of the support person, okay, as far as guiding, providing comfort measures through labor. They also do a lot of education. We also do a lot of education and pregnancy as well, and kind of fill in the holes. You know, maybe the family might not see their midwife or doctor for a while, but the doula has a more, you know, intimate, more personal relationship, we help with continuity of care, help with breastfeeding too, and support the midwife or doctor, and those roles act like we're the liaison between the families and the doctors. We do all kinds of stuff, get resources for families if they need it, but they go hand in hand. Midwifery, of course, you have more education and certification than a doula.
All right. See, I'm learning something already. So besides the wonderful Eric Bagdu and the great sisterhood and everything else we're going to see there, what are the highlights or else things that we might be able to look forward to? You're off to a great start, by the way.
Well, one of the other highlights that we have is the youth track.
All right.
So because the theme is
honor. This is Kimberly.
Kimberly Porter. Yes,
Kimberly. The theme of the conference is honoring our past, embracing our future.
Okay.
So we want to create an awareness for young people about the birth work profession, about the history of midwifery. Mm-hmm. So we can create a workforce of young healers that can become doulas, that can become midwives, that can become lactation consultants. Mm-hmm. So we have recruited about 15 students from various schools here in Portland that have expressed an interest in to go into the healthcare field.
You bet.
So that's one of our great highlights. We're going to have a separate, you know, conference for them, focusing on sisterhood, talking about rites of passage, what does it mean to be a woman, all those kind of rites of passage rituals that young women go through, and then leading, you know, meeting other, because we're going to have, like I said, midwives and doulas all around the world, all around the country, to be able to meet these young women, to talk about what it took for them to become a midwife or a doula so they can pursue that career.
So then part of the conference and part of the educational aspect is to get young people involved, as you're saying, as a way for young women, of course, young people to get into the workforce, and this is another opportunity when they're into the health field, which is always booming and popular, but this is a healthy alternative that helps with sisterhood and all the things that go on in the Black community.
And it'll increase the workforce.
Yes.
So we need, you know, there's research that shows that birth workers help and increase birth outcomes.
Yes.
So we want to, there's a smaller percentage of Black midwives and doulas out in the community, so we want to increase that number. So what better way than to recruit the youth?
Absolutely.
To recruit young people that are interested in the field. So it's an opportunity to meet some powerful, I mean, phenomenal midwives and healers from around the country and around the world.
Are there huge disparities between the amount of white midwives and doulas and Black ones? Is that disparity, or is there a huge gap between that?
Yes, and I was going to piggyback off of what Kim said.
Okay.
And in addition to increasing the workforce, but also increasing the workforce of women that look like us,
all right,
Black
now we're
women,
getting somewhere.
Because that is the key and the success of the birth, you know, the birth rates and the pregnancy. Yes. And there are studies that show women who are supported by people who look like them feel more comfortable and able to birth their babies.
Absolutely.
And feel comfortable in their environments, and when they're supported by people who look like them, the numbers look better. So yes, there is a big disparity, to answer your question. There is a big disparity in the numbers of providers that are white and Black, and so this is what ICTC's mission is, to close that gap and enhance it, and especially in our community here in Portland, Oregon.
Now, you mentioned the infant mortality rate of Black babies born. How will this conference address that issue in the three sessions? Because it's going to be three sessions starting October 9th going to the 11th. So I'm guessing those are the three sessions, right?
Well, there's different sessions throughout the day. And infant mortality is going to come up throughout the conference.
Oh, okay.
But there's specific workshops that have their specific titles. But of course, the emphasis is going to be, the main goal, of course, is to bring the awareness and some action behind reducing this infant mortality rate.
Do you have an idea currently what the rate is like?
And it is 11.4%, I believe, wow. In the Black community, and it's the highest in the nation.
Surprise, surprise.
11.4 is the rate at which, and compared to white babies,
and that's here in Portland,
and here in Portland, wow. in the Multnomah County, and wow. I don't have the numbers for nationally.
And give our audience a reason why that happens.
Well, there's, for one, racism, of course.
All right, we're gonna start
one.
At the top. You betcha.
Racism and oppression is at the high, and of course, that stemming from there, the stress, you know, of racism and oppression, which, you know, financially, yeah. that affects finances, that affects nutrition and health, that affects our environment, that affects our self-esteem, mm-hmm. how we perceive ourselves, internalized racism,
yeah.
All those things, of course. So, you know, there's a movie called The Stress Undo, When the Ball Breaks, that shows this disparity, mm-hmm. and it goes into a lot about stress and how a Black woman can graduate from college and have a degree and live in an affluent neighborhood, but still have a low birth weight baby, and they tied it to the racism and being a Black woman. Right. Period. And you know,
all the stress that comes.
Yeah,
along
all
with
the stress that comes along right. with that, and you know, just our relationship as men and women, how we relate with each other, also affects that as well.
Let's touch on that, because we do have a Black man in the room, and so we don't want.
I'm feeling all questions. That is important.
So I understand that that there will be conversation in the conference about uplifting Black men to the to be leaders, and as well as promote better fathers and mm-hmm. learn to co-parent, even if they're not in the mother and the child's life 24/7.
Right.
How will the conference address that as well?
Well, just like you said, there's no specific, like I said, no specific workshop. In the past, there has been a father's workshop and whatnot, with a lot of men in response and whatnot.
You're not the same as the moms classes, are they?
No, totally opposite. This is like real deal, like nitty gritty, getting down to what the needs are. And the need is that we have to be realistic that about the family dynamics in the Black home.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, it stems from our environment, what we see, you know, what we've learned, that we need to unlearn certain messages and whatnot,
yes.
and we need to uplift our Black men. We need to and encourage them as well, at, you know, and there's a lot that plays into that.
We know that, you know, we have the proportion of single Black mothers, of course, at race. There's not a lot of Black men at home, of course. That, back to that, access to health care, unburdened stress, and everything else that goes along with the whole process. Clearly, if the Black men aren't at home and you have a lot of single Black mothers out there, Lord have knows they're not getting the kind of care and treatment, everything else that they need to have full, productive, healthy babies. I mean, that all makes sense to me.
But also, I want to say that, you know, as an ICTC trained doula, mm-hmm. we also incorporate the father, regardless of the relationship.
Okay.
So when we work with these young we work with these young mothers, we want to make sure that regardless of the relationship they have with the father, that the father's involved.
Exactly.
So the sitter is definitely the baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a...
What is the man's role? And I'm asking this again because I want to know. What is the man's role specifically throughout this process? If you got the doula, you got the midwife, what's the man's role throughout this process, up to childbirth and and before, I guess.
Well, the doula encourages the father to be the doula.
The like, doula does not replace the father.
The doula does not replace the father at all. Like, that's what, you know, at ICTC, the mission is to include the father. Okay. So we, when the woman is in prenatals, you know, you'll see on TV or you'll see that the woman is by herself in prenatals, especially the black woman might be. So that's what I meant by mixed messages and unlearning. But in ICTC, we try to include, we want the father to be present. We want him to be getting the same information as the mom is, so that you know and are informed and able to support her the best way possible. And throughout the pregnancy, he comes to prenatals, and in birth, you've learned all you need to learn in order to support her through birth and labor. And the end, you know how to support her through postpartum and being there, and it enhances you guys' relationship as well.
We're gonna learn the men are gonna learn a whole lot through this process.
Yes,
it sounds
exactly.
Like.
You learn a lot about yourself.
So it sounds like when you uplift the fathers in the child and the mother's life, you're uplifting the family, that reduces the stress. It reduces, and we don't think about those things.
Absolutely.
Yes. It's like what you just said, Zalacia, in terms of unlearning mixed messages. If we unlearn those mixed messages and get back to the basics of things, not everything, but there are some basics that help a balanced family. And it sounds like to me that, you know, hopefully that will incorporate it will be incorporated the importance of a balanced relationship and family when the father is involved in helping the mother reduce her stress.
Yes.
So we got that aspect. So now let's talk about, can you speak on the history of doula and midwifery? I understand doula is a Greek word. But, you know, unfortunately for black people, we've, African people, we lost our native tongue. So we don't really know what the word is that we would use that's not doula. So speak on that. Speak on the African ancestry of being a midwife and doula.
Well, of course, the legacy of the African, if you could go back to the village, of course there was the women who supported the women in the village. That's just how it was. There wasn't any education system. There wasn't, you know, somebody telling you what to do. Women just, they didn't have a degree or anything. Women just supported women through labor. And of course we came over here through enslavement, and we were, our village per se was torn down, and we were place to serve as granny midwives for the white families. And so that term granny midwives came from that model here, that role, you know, of the, you know, the older woman.
You see all those pictures in the history books of the old black lady taking care of these two little white kids all the time.
Exactly.
And serving as wet nurses.
Wet nurses, yes.
Well. The,
yes, for sure. So, the history, I mean, it's straightforward. It started, you know, that's been in our blood. That's been who we were. Yeah. That's who, you know, we've always assisted women and throughout their pregnancies and births. And then when the medicalization of birth and came in and took over because of, you know, all
segregation and everything else, you probably still weren't getting black people in hospitals to receive the kind of care that they probably needed at the time.
Right.
And would you even go as far as to say that African women taught other women how to
I
think be a midwife and a doula?
Wait, you said African women taught other women how to be midwives?
Enslaved African women. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because history has taught us that African women, as Stephen mentioned, were, you know, teaching and birthing, or not birthing, but
raising
white children, you know, breastfeeding white children, right?
Yes.
So, I guess the question that I'm saying, would you go as far as to say that we played a part in helping?
Yeah, and the people, I would say, with the families that we served in those times or through that lineage. But midwives, of course, have culturally, and all cultures are the main doctors, healers in all villages, not just African. So, you know, the legacy of the midwife period is
goes way back to pre-industrialization societies and recognized. Up before the invention of the hospital.
It's not just an African thing, but the legacy of our, you know, our lineage with the African midwife, of course, has a big impact on the people in the United States, in America. That is the difference. Like, there's, you know, birth workers everywhere, but as far as a big influence in America,
okay, got you.
Yeah.
Got you.
You would think that on that same role we're talking about, of course, with not only slaves taking care of white children, the slave children, but of course then, you know, thinking back in those days, or they weren't going to hospitals back then either, so they were probably, again, having to have their children in their slave quarters, and like you said, teaching each other, teaching their daughters how to help each other get through pregnancy when, again, you're not jumping in your carriage and going to Providence Hospital, you know, back in South Carolina during the 1800s or in those days. So you had to, of course, do those things. And we're trying to, of course, build that legacy through institutions like ICTC. And back to the idea you're talking before about, you know, seeing black faces, you know, during that process. And I think that probably has a lot to deal with it, too, is black people going to hospitals and seeing a black doctor there who's actually, and a black nurse who's there for you. And that certain level of comfort to let you know this person's, hey, I'm going to be all right. Yeah. This person's going to build a level of cultural, you know, thing, kind of clash we got going on here versus.
We'll speak on that, Zalation, because you and I, when we met last Sunday, you had mentioned, we had both talked about how, you know, that's kind of traumatizing. You know, you're in this dark, watery place, and then you come out, not only are you traumatized by the light, but you're also traumatized by not seeing a darker face, like that, what that baby is used to.
For the mother's experience and possibly for the baby's experience. I just lost my train of thought. I would say yes. So when you have people that look like you serving you in that role, that transition from that Sequoia is talking about, coming out of the womb, you know, you're in this, you, if you're in the hospital environment and that baby is coming out, you are immediately, like, you're grabbed by some hands and wiped down. It's loud, it's bright, it's a totally different environment than if the baby was born at home, you know, where you can have, mom could have the option of having low lights and
some Teddy Pendergrass in the background,
music in the background and people, softer voices, and letting the mom grab her baby and letting the mom, you know, lead the care and, you know, and the baby gets to see the mother first and people hear the dad's voice first versus some doctor and nurse or whoever else, you know, it can, it's less traumatizing, you know, for mom and baby and those types of environments. Or if there was an option in the medical model of care for it to be like that, it would be less traumatizing than the standard of care that we have
today. You also have to think that that's a very intimate setting where someone is looking all at your body and poking and prodding and everything else. And Lord knows I don't like wearing those things to the hospital and being naked either. So I can only imagine, if, you know, who's looking at me on the other side and the level of comfort and cultural comfort that goes along with who's actually going to be looking at me, operating on me, cutting into my skin in some situations with, you know, with surgery and everything else it is. And that level of comfort with color probably goes a long way as well, you know, as far as that kind of intimate setting and a certain level of comfort of who's looking at you.
That's why it's important. I mean, having, you know, black women having black doulas. In terms of, even because a lot of our black women do birth in the hospital. You don't have, I mean, there are, you know, percentages of those that do want to birth at home, and there are the percentages that birth in the birthing centers. But the majority of our black women are going to birth in the hospital. So that's why it's great to have a doulas of color, especially black doulas that are there to support them through that, so they can encourage them on how to have their birth plan. If they decide they want the lights to be dim, if they don't, if they want to have skin to skin contact with their baby as opposed to, you know, letting the baby go into the incubator and that kind of stuff. So that's really important to have that discussion, because I feel like when black women have black doulas, they feel more comfortable sharing what they don't like about their physician, and so we can help them advocate and assist them in being able to advocate for themselves when they don't like certain things with the doctors.
Yeah, and to piggyback off again with Kim said, like, the whole mistrust black of the medical system and with our people. Like there's this whole, you know, from the past history of us being mistreated and the medical system that still is ingrained in us.
Can't go
thinking
nowhere.
About post-traumatic slavery and all those that dynamic, like it's still ingrained in us to, you know, mistrust. So what Kim is saying about having that doula, because of course we're not, there's not a lot of black doctors, of course, but a doula, you're, it's easier to become a doula than it is to become a doctor, but a doula can fill in that space, you know, as the support person and give the family the information that they need and able. And like she said, this was the other key point she brought up, is opening up. We are not comfortable opening up, giving all our information to someone who we're most likely not going to open up to someone who does not look like us. We're more comfortable, you know, with our own and being and and so that's in that role. So that's why I agree, totally am glad that Kim brought that up, because it's important, especially with the youth, young girls too,
and knowing what to, like what to expect. And there's a lot of times, you know, being a doula, working with black women, that they will say, you know, once they tell me how, when they, before I go to their first prenatal appointment, they'll say that they have been violated by their physicians once they tell me what's going on. And historically, as black women, we haven't had control over our reproduction. We, our bodies have been used for to build this country, to build a workforce. So there's a lot of trauma. There's still a lot of residual trauma around that, you know, having a pelvic exam or having a cervical exam. And, you know,
just like there's police skepticism and government skepticism with black, and with black people, there is definitely hospital and health skepticism with black people. I'm absolutely sure of it. Again, as we, you know, poke needles and poking my baby with, what are you, you know, and that building that kind of knowledge gap between the blacks and that kind of cultural differences in white hospital people and nurses and doctors definitely goes a long way.
And even like our bodies have been used a lot of times for medical experimentation. And so, you know, there's that hesitancy about going to the hospital in the first place. So it's already a scary experience. That's why it's great to have a doula to be there to support you when you have questions or concerns or, you know, things happen to make you feel uncomfortable.
So let's go ahead and close this first part out. Go ahead and explain what ICTC will be doing during the conference October 9th through the 11th, and what to expect, and how people can get more information. Go.
Well, the conference, of course, is gonna, well, there will be a bunch of educators and healers from around the world presenting on workshops about birth justice and vaginal birth after cesarean, birth emergency skills. There's all infant mortality, preventing infant mortality, supporting breastfeeding, encouraging more black women to breastfeed for longer than a year. Like there's all kinds of workshops that we have planned throughout the weekend. So the schedule is online. It is at www.conference.ictcmidwives.org. Again, www.conference.ictcmidwives.org. And there's a full agenda on there. You can register for the conference from there. And it goes from October 9th from 7 a.m., I should say, all the way through October 11th, Sunday, October 11th at 3 p.m.
Awesome. And outside of ICTC, you both have some things going on. Miss Kimberly Porter, you're with Black Parent Initiative, right?
Yes.
You guys have a an event happening this Saturday. Go ahead and plug that.
Yes. This Saturday, October 3rd at Warner Pacific College, we have our Black our sixth annual parent symposium. Our theme is We Are the Village. So we're going to have some great speakers. We're going to have 300 Watts is going to be there. We're going to be talking, some of the topics that we're going to be talking about is the first 1,000 days, navigating your child's education, knowing your rights. So we're just really excited about bringing the Black community together and recreating the village here in Portland, Oregon.
Amen. Absolutely. A lot of awesome stuff are happening to make that happen. So that's really awesome. And then with you, Zalacia, you are starting your Pilates class.
Oh, yes, I am. So I started Ascension Well Body and Fitness. I personally am for the community. I want people, a lot of fitness people, they're into yoga or other styles of fitness. I should say people that look like you and me, black people, are not into Pilates.
Yes.
And so I am bringing Pilates to the community.
All right.
But I'm adding a little bit of oomph because I am an African dancer and I love high intensity cardio based movement and and exercise. And so I'm fusing Pilates, the postural exercises of Pilates, and the high intensity training and cardio elements to fuse them together to one compact workout that's fun, upbeat, low impact, but get your heart rate up there. And then I have another specialty class too. But you can go to www.ascendwellfit.com and get more information about the classes.
And I have to say, I took your class, the last class that you had, and I struggled, but I did it.
Man,
and
I missed out. I didn't get that invitation.
And I had a great time.
You will now.
And, and you're very a great teacher. And
thank
you have some awesome music playing too, so that was really cool.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm going to be invited next time. I did that Beachbody Insanity workout once.
I love Insanity.
All right, see?
Wow.
I ain't flexible, though, so I don't know about the whole Pilates thing, but I'm in there.
You don't have to be flexible at all. That's why you come, to get flexible.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, see? That it builds flexibility, right?
Yes, like, builds flexibility, balance, coordination, core. It's a lot of core focus.
I need core.
Yes. Damn, me too.
Get your heart rate up.
I need core.
Amen.
Well, ladies, Kimberly Porter and Zalacia Jackson, thank you so much for coming down and sharing about the conference. It was very, very helpful, very, very informative. Hopefully our folks will register and participate, especially our folks that look like us.
Yes.
It'd be really awesome.
Absolutely. That was the word of the night.
And hopefully you'll come back to Ear to the Streets.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
You betcha. Anytime. Come on back.
So again, if you are just tuning in or you need to need a reminder, this is Ear to the Streets of Portland, which happens every first and third Thursday of the month, starting at 7 o'clock. And then we go into more music at 8 o'clock till 10. And then you'll stay tuned for Autonomy Hour after that, starting at 10 o'clock and going through the night.
Yes, indeed.
And so I thought that we would take this last 15 minutes or so before we go to the next hour to talk about some current events, right, Steven?
So much going on.
So much going on.
Man, I've been catching up with you on your Facebook post. We caught up the other night at the Urban League
man, I just couldn't wait to pick your brain today. I know you're ready to go, so yes.
Well, let's start off first with the whole issue with Bill Cosby. Yes. I kind of wanted to touch on that.
Let's do it.
So recently, his degrees are being taken away from I can't remember the college, but
he was taken away from Temple University. I know one from Villanova University
and Brown, right?
Brown University. Yeah. Yes, they're coming after all of his honorary degrees.
I mean, now let me just preface by saying that I understand, addressing the issue around rape culture, if you want to call it that. I know that that's a popular term these days.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, me personally, I really feel like, you know, 30, 40 years is a long time to find out how someone was raped. Or, you know, I'm just saying.
Yes.
I'm just putting it out there. And so, you know, these women are, you know, well into their season of life.
Yes.
50s, 60s.
Plus.
And Bill Cosby is almost on his way out at 80-something years old.
Yes.
And so it's just really weird.
The timing is always what gets me. The thing is, and again, we just want to reiterate, by in no way are we condoning rape behavior and everything
Absolutely
else it is.
Not.
We have all the sympathy in the world. But what is the statute of limitations on some of this stuff? And again, and I'm with you on the timing. I understand that there's all kinds of trauma stuff that comes along with it, but why now? And what in the world, with every college just treating this, I mean, Cosby like he's, you know, Thomas Jefferson, which is a lot more worse than Bill Cosby's ever done. It's mind-boggling. It tears me apart.
It tears me apart, and my heart goes out to him. At first, when this all came out, I was like, well, you know, I didn't know what to think. You know, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And then Felicia Rashad came out, you know, speaking in defense of him. And,
yes.
And black women yes. were attacking her. And I'm like, why are y'all attacking this woman? You're talking about women empowerment, but you're attacking this woman that's been
on the show with the brother forever.
Well, not only that, but she has a long list of things that she's done for community,
yes.
for black people. And you are attacking her.
Yes.
You know, and so that happened. And so then it started, then I started looking side-eye.
Uh-huh.
And then more women came out, and then you got the token black women that are coming out saying that,
yes.
you know, that he,
everybody who didn't get a role on the Cosby Show between 84 and 89 is now lined up, coming out of the woodworks.
Coming out
every
the woodworks.
B movie actress is coming
if
out the
that.
Woodwork. Hey, C movies, do they make those?
If that,
Lord. You straight to DVD actresses is coming after Bill Cosby now. Lord have mercy. It just makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
And it turns the show. I mean, Malcolm Jamal Warner and everybody has to answer questions about it. You know, they took Cosby off of TV land and all the syndications.
Yeah.
Brother, I love the Cosby Show still to this day.
A different world.
And it's gone. And they just, the whole legacy of Bill Cosby just gone out the windows with this thing.
I mean, and that's what bothers me. It's like, okay, yeah. fine. If you want to address it. But why do you have to take away the man's legacy? All the things that, all the philanthropy this man did, all the work that he did. And I understand that there's some black people that are like, well, you know, that time that he came out and he did the whole pound cake speech over Lordy. A decade ago, where I can't remember what university it was that he spoke at, but he basically was at the speech where he was telling, you know, young black men, pull up your pants, you know, start being accountable.
Yeah.
Saying the same thing that we're talking about a decade later right now.
Yeah, he was a coon back then for saying this stuff
5-10 years
ago.
There
I mean,
you
Lord,
go.
10
there
years
you
ago,
go.
He was a coon who didn't understand the black youth and black people
there
and everything
go.
Else, telling people to pull their pants up. And now they after his checkbook, and every good thing that the man's ever done is now thrown into question. Every college donation, every building with his name on it, all coming down, and everything else it is. But, you know, it just don't make no sense to me, and it's just so sad. One of the most sad parts about it, too, is the apologists, black people out there who have tried to come on the defense and just get shot down left and right, and those who want to just hang the brother, too. It's just like, why do we have to fight that battle internally about how far black people are willing to apologize and for other black people, and black people will stand behind any black person no matter how harm that's done. Well, yeah, well, if ain't nobody else going to stand up for a brother besides the black community, who else would?
Who will?
I mean, who we waiting on?
Come on now.
I mean, who else is going to support
him? And
that's
what I'm saying. And that's something that bothers me even more, is the fact that our own people are willing to forgive the mass shooter that killed nine people in North Carolina. We're really willing to forgive, but you're not going to forgive this man who, you know, gave into the devil. And let me just say, you know, back during the time where they're talking about he was drugging women, you know,
He was the only brother on the block on TV. Well, I mean, can we start back there?
Well, no, but not that. I'm saying back during the 80s, late 70s, going into the 80s with the whole Quaalude thing everything. That, I mean, people were popping those pills like they were candy.
Oh, are you kidding me?
It's no different than how young kids right now are popping Xanax bars, popping Mollies.
You bet.
You know, it's no different. And, you know, and they're acting like he just did the worst thing in the world. And not to mention, you know, there have been people that have said, hey, you know, we were partying back then.
Yes.
We didn't. Whoopi Goldberg, she had said it on The View, where she was like, I was a huge
Studio 54. Yeah. I mean, there's a legend about it.
A huge Quaalude proper.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying that that gives, you know, gives an excuse.
Yes.
I'm not saying that. But if you're going to use that as a way of saying, hey, you know, he was drugging women to rape them. I mean,
ain't the first one.
I mean, Janice Dickens, you know, we shouldn't even be saying these names, but some of the people that are coming out saying, I mean, were known drug addicts.
Exactly. And known backdoor get apart any way possible people too. Thank you, Jesus.
I mean, I think that we're saying all this because it just doesn't sound right. You know, apples and oranges, it's not mixing.
And a man can do a lot of good things with his life, and one bad thing or even a few bad things. I don't even know what the exact number is. They can't all cancel out all the good things that a man can do, and all the people who received the great education, the buildings, and the donations that were made between him and his wife. And that's the other part about it. The man's, what about his wife who has to read all these things, see all these things, who have a family with this man who was part of the Board of Education with her husband, and his attack on her has clearly probably leaks into her life, and I'm sure she's not doing all that great emotionally with all this stuff too, and it takes a toll on all the things that they tried to do, all the good things that they tried to do on college campuses. Just go to the wayside.
There you go. And you know, if callers are listening, if you want to weigh in on what we're talking about, if you have an opinion and you want to share it with us, give us a call here at the Air Room, 503-231-8187. Don't be scared. Let us know what you think. Whether you're pro Cosby or anti Cosby, we will love to hear and hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, bet.
And I want to bring, and this is kind of a link, but not a link.
Okay, all right.
So, you know, we saw each other at a recent event.
We did.
And the topic was around diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we talk about diversity and inclusion, how is it that, let's say, for like example, with Bill Cosby, he's being torn down, his legacy's being torn down. But then you have white producers, white directors, known to be child predators.
Yes.
I mean, most recently, the Subway guy.
People still lined up at Subway now.
He just got a tap on the hand.
Yeah.
Right? So when we talk about diversity and inclusion.
Lord. I mean,
how are we really going to try to practice that?
That's the whole thing I kept thinking at this whole event. I know we're not saying no names, but organizations have always, black ones especially, have always come to this. I haven't seen much backlash. You know, it's the whole Matt Damon thing. It said that black actors should be happy for the roles they get, and as long as they're in movies and not the lead actors, they should be happy. And he didn't even get no backlash for that. Lord have mercy talking about it, but... Yes, it always seems like when we go to these things, black people are always looking to reach out a hand and look for some seclusion, preach the mode of diversity, as if we just can't do it ourselves. It just keeps on beating me in the head that these organizations do not think that with all the black people in the room, black business leaders, owners, and the few black elected officials that were there, they don't think we can do it ourselves, and they're always looking to throw that broom of diversity and multiculturalism and inclusion and progressiveness. Always, always, always. And it's demoralizing. Because again, it's a cop out saying you don't think that you can raise enough money or that the rich black men and people in this room right now aren't gonna be enough for us to secure what they call, you know, their policy, you know, and their economic agenda and everything else it is. That's really what they're saying. We ain't gonna do it ourselves. We need some help. Yeah, it just drives me nuts.
It drives me nuts. You know, and this is not to say that the good, well meaning people who actually do mean well in terms of wanting to see progress.
Yes.
You know, again, I will continue to say this, you know, in order for Black Lives to matter, they have to matter to us first.
Yes, I always say.
And before we can ever think that we can look for other people to value us,
mm-hmm.
we have to value our the work that we do.
Absolutely.
You know, and I appreciate our last guest that came down to talk about the midwifery and doula training or conference. You know, I love that the emphasis hopefully will be for more Black women to be midwives, yeah, and things like that, because we need to focus in on those types of things.
Absolutely. Which is why when inclusion and stuff always comes up, it totally backfires on exactly what you're
saying. There you go.
It totally takes us back exactly against what you're saying, when we always have to preach and talk about inclusion every single time that Black people ask for stuff. We ask for justice, we ask for voting rights, we ask for some jobs. It's always about, can we be included? Can we be included? We just want inclusion. We want included into what? I kept saying to myself, included into
gosh, I was listening to you in your head.
Yes, included in what? We want inclusion in a white supremacist economic system that deprives Black people. We want included in that. I mean, do you want to be included in the voting system that totally denies the Black vote? You want included in that? You want inclusion in a prison population that's heavily voted by Black? Are you talking about? Inclusion?
Right. Do you want inclusion with us in terms of trying to kill old money like Bill Cosby?
You know what I'm saying? Are you inclusion in taking down the money order system, or just perpetuating the money order system? What are we getting included in? That's the question I want to know.
Call in, folks. 503-231-8187. We still got about 5 minutes left of this first hour of Ear to the Streets, and we're just vibing. We just talking about the things that are really bothering us.
You know, they got all these great donors there. We get the person from Nike up there. Mess. The person from Wells Fargo gets up there, and they're talking about diversity and all these great things. And we need to be involved and in charge and everything else. And I'm thinking, Lord have mercy. I'm always reading about my brother can't get along at Wells Fargo. So what in the world is she talking about up here, for crying out loud? Nike's in here talking about donations. Me and my brothers out there the street at the convention center right now shooting over some Air Yeezys right now for $300 shoes. And all them Black kids right now with no shoes. And Nike's in here talking crazy. Lord have mercy. I just don't get it, what people are talking about. It just totally blows my mind that those people would be in a room talking about, let's get an agenda together to solve the Black people. I'm thinking, y'all don't know already? Y'all don't know already? Yeah, like, for real, Nike, y'all people don't really know what it takes.
I mean, just in the year 2015, all the cops that have gotten off of shooting, unarmed Black people.
Yes.
You know, you want to talk about inclusion, diversity? Okay, let's talk about all of it.
Yes.
Let's talk about all of it.
No kidding. And some of it, and the other thing about it too is, some of it's not about inclusion. Some of it should be about exclusion. Hey, some of it is, we want our own stuff away from y'all, and that should be perfectly okay too. And that's the other part about it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like having options, and yes. I think that's what bothers me about what's happening with Bill Cosby, is that he has been able to open the doors for so many people and give other people options.
Yes.
And I feel like that is that's the part of his legacy that's yes. wanting to be taken down, because, generate that wealth, pass it down.
You know, the funny thing too is that, and get back to Black Lives Matter move, is why the Black Lives thing is so so confrontational and cross much static is because it throws itself in the face of, it is the one thing that is not inclusionary. It's talking about Black Lives Matter, and it's the one thing that throws itself in the face of inclusion. And much we're talking about Cosby opportunities is that Black people need the opportunity to exclude themselves when they feel like it. Like you said, opportunity need access. It's fine if I want options. The option of staying away from you and I want the option of staying in a Black neighborhood with Black school, with a Black principal and a Black hospital nearby, with a Black bus driver, and buy my shoes at a Black grocery store. I want that option. And you can call it inclusion in the economic workforce, you can call it inclusion in capitalism, but I will also call it exclusion from unnecessary drama and exclusion from people who don't look like me. How about that? I mean, is that PC?
And that's well, you know, that's the thing. Like, it's important to be able to have self-resiliency. Yes. We talk about that so much, but do we really want that? Like, are we really wanting to build for that?
Oh, that's the tough question. And I asked this after the thing. I kept thinking to myself, do Black people really want to change the system?
Because
do we just want our cake in the pie of the system?
Because if we really did, then we can be able to protect our elders that have worked hard. We're not just talking about, people who've just, been you know, charlatans, you know, their whole career.
Yeah.
We're talking about somebody who actually gave money, who right. actually have put, not just himself, speaking on Bill Cosby, but his wife, his family, you know, his son.
Reputation on the line.
Reputation, you know. You know, and some of these people that are accusing Bill Cosby are the same women who had their hands out when they needed money for their college tuition.
And also okay? had their hands out when they're looking for a role in some B-movie and they wanted to be an extra on the Cosby Show, too, to get back to that. You're absolutely right. And it's just crazy how that works.
So, you know, if we're going to talk about inclusion and we're going to talk about diversity, let's talk about all of it. You know, if you're gonna throw rocks and stones at one black man or woman, I hope that you're throwing stones at the next white man or white woman, or not even non-black people. We're not just talking about white.
I'm throwing
white
stones
folks.
At everybody.
It's all across the board because
you betcha.
we're getting into this idea that we're just attacking white supremacy. No, we're talking about white supremacy and white supremacy supporters.
You betcha. And the ignorance that it reproduces, and perpetuates on a daily basis.
There you go. Because I mean, I can go to certain places and not get respected from white folks or any non-black person.
You betcha.
And not to mention, you getting no respect from our own people half
Lord
the time.
Lord have mercy. Okay, well, your brother can't go nowhere and get respect. You see what I'm saying?
So when we talk about inclusion and diversity, let's talk about how we're going to include and be diversify amongst ourselves as black people. Because how are we going to get respect from anybody else if we don't even respect each
and
other?
And that gets us back to exclusion. If we ain't getting no respect, then leave us alone. Leave me alone. If there's no place that I can go and get some respect and the store clerk ain't looking at me funny and the bank telling everybody else is, then I want some exclusion then. Because the inclusion ain't doing me no good because I'm getting looked at just like you when people, you know, crossing the street on you and they're looking at you through the video cameras and following you around the stores. I don't want no part of that, okay? I don't want to be included in that. Yeah, y'all can keep me out.
It's definitely getting old.
Yes, in 2015.
2015, it's definitely old. It's been old.
Hey, I thought the black president was going to solve all these problems. What happened, man? Obama, what happened? Brother still can't get, you know, can't get through Plaid Pantry without getting the side eye. I'm writing, I'm on my Congressman and Obama on that one. It's 2015. Lord, help us.
So, yeah, you know, we're just vibing. We just had to get this off our mind. You know, this it's not local, but it is local.
It's local. Yes, it is.
Because
it's about black people
national,
right here in Portland.
It happens right here in Portland.
You bet. Affected
right
by
face.
It on a daily basis, sweetheart.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to the first hour of Ear to the Streets. We're going to go ahead and get into the music. Stephen G, as always.
Pleasure is all mine. Are you kidding? You're fantastic.
You're fantastic.
Oh, well, see, they don't really got to do that on air.